This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Fear over J&J's vax, it's halted. And the latest on what's happening in Afghanistan, the end of a war. We start first, though not in Afghanistan, we first start in Minneapolis. A use of force expert for Derek Chauvin's defense says he was justified in kneeling on George Floyd. What do you think? Kate at KateDelaneyRadio.com. You can flip me your thoughts there. We're looking at what will possibly happen next week when I believe the jury will make their decision as the defense rests its case probably on Thursday or Friday. So this use of force expert testified, came in, he was a paid expert, and said that he was justified and was acting with objective reasonableness following Minneapolis Police Department's policy and current standards of law enforcement in his interactions with George Floyd when he put his neck, when he put his knee on his neck and choked the life out of him after 9 minutes. Now, the crux of the argument is that he didn't consider putting a handcuffed Floyd in the prone position, the prone control position on the street, to be a use of force. He even suggested that it was safer for the subject because if they get up and fall, they might hurt their face. Lots of people had many of thoughts about this, saying it was truly ridiculous. I'm going to just say I will piggyback on that. It is truly ridiculous what this paid defense expert said. Even the boys in blue have jumped the line, and this is the thing that you never see, you know, the blue wall, in saying this is not the training, this was not correct, etc., from the chief on down. So the defense is doing what it was going to do. This is what they're trying to present, saying it was more drug-related with Floyd, who had problems managing pain. And the Brood testimony, that's the name of the expert, again, came as the defense called its first six witnesses in the trial, including two who discussed Floyd's prior arrest and drug use in May of 2019. So obviously the defense's three main arguments in the case are that Floyd died due to drug and health problems, that Chauvin's use of force, Derek Chauvin, the ex-cop, his use of force was ugly but appropriate, and that a hostile crowd of bystanders distracted Chauvin. The prosecution called all totaled 38 witnesses over 11 days. Their proving, or their quest, was to prove that Chauvin used excessive force and unreasonable force when he kneeled, put his knee on Floyd's neck and back for 9 minutes and 29 seconds last May. So their case relied heavily on multiple videos of Chauvin's actions, analysis by policing experts and medical experts. And so now it's on to the defense. Derek Chauvin has pled not guilty to second-degree unintentional murder, third-degree murder, second-degree manslaughter charges. The defense's case is expected only to last a couple days, probably wraps up by Thursday or Friday, and then, as I mentioned before, this all goes to the jury, and they decide what the fate is of Derek Chauvin. By the way, just a quick aside to this, in cross-examination, Barry Broad, who was the paid expert, the police officer, in cross-examination, he said he was not specifically aware of Minneapolis Police Department's definition of force, which defines force as a restraint that causes injury or pain. He also acknowledged that putting someone in the side recovery position is simple and quick. And at one point, he said Floyd was resisting officers for a couple of minutes after being taken to the ground. Prosecutors then played several video clips of Derek Chauvin kneeling on Floyd, and Brood admitted he wasn't sure if Floyd was struggling with police or if he was just writhing on the ground. He said, "I don't know the difference." Boom. End of story there, and the defense moves on. Sadly, there is so much tension in Minneapolis because you have the death of another black man at a being pulled over on Sunday in the afternoon, and police in a Minneapolis suburb that now have used pepper spray and fired flash bombs at crowds demonstrating over the death of Daunte Wright, as the officer who fatally shot him submitted a resignation letter, and as did the chief in that area. So Kim Potter, a veteran police officer who had been there 25 years in Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, resigns and just does it, you know, to a two-sentence resignation letter saying it would be better for the community if she resigned. And then you had the chief who did the same thing. So now you have an acting chief there, and the conversation about what happened when she reached to taser Daunte Wright and instead fatally shot Wright while she was, by the way, training another police officer. So it just the details just continue to go spiraling in the wrong direction. And the fatal shooting of this 20-year-old black man by a white police officer outside of Minneapolis proper, very close, has prompted these protests and clashes with law enforcement, you know, once again. And the killing on Sunday was the third highest profile death of a black man during a police encounter in the Minneapolis area in the past 5 years. And this, again, was an officer who had been on the job a long time. She joined the police department in 1995. She was even the police union's president in 2019. She had been on the department's negotiation team, worked as a field training officer. So after being placed on administrative leave on Sunday, which is procedure, she decided that it was best if she just resigned. And then Police Chief Gannon also decided it was best if he resigned from the police department as well. What happens there, and as the family's infuriated and they're seeking justice, it's up in the air, because this is normal procedure for police and how they handle it and what they do investigating, you know, going through the A through Z that they have to go through when that happens. Hey, coming up, we're going to get your thoughts on that and the Johnson & Johnson pause to the COVID-19 vaccine after six women have problems, blood clots. One in the United States dies, the other in critical condition. So there is worry that the J&J pause could deliver a serious psychological blow. We're talking about that on the flip side as we dive into the mail.
If there's a sudden disaster and you can't get to the grocery store, or they're all out of food, what would you do? You'll wish you had emergency food to get you through the crisis. And that's why we're here. We're MyPatriotSupply.com, America's leading source of emergency food. Our food lasts for up to 25 years, and millions of families trust us for their disaster survival. Won't you join us? Unlike other food companies, we don't skimp on calories. Our meals give you more than 2,000 calories per day. Why? Because that's what you need to survive any challenging crisis. And right now, you can save $200 on our popular 3-month emergency food kit. Just go to MyPatriotSupply.com and place your order. We ship fast 2 to 3 days max, and your food arrives discreetly right to your door. So order today and save $200 at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
Hey, everybody. If you've ever thought about heirloom beans as a storable survival food, I've got great news. In fact, I'll bet it's the best news you've heard in a while. Here's the thing. We've just received a fresh batch of gourmet heirloom beans, survival soup beans. These beans are gorgeous, highly nutritious, and above all, with no hesitation whatsoever, the best tasting beans in the entire world. The best part? We've dropped the price by 33% this week for listeners who know higher food prices are coming and want an inflation hedge you can actually eat if you want to. Gets even better. With your permission and with a high regard for your health and well-being, I also want to send you 2 pounds of what we think is the single most underrated superfood in the world, period. Go to soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com, and discover the real reason we're giving this unusual superfood away at soupbeansurvival.com, that's soupbeansurvival.com.
With more people at home due to the pandemic, it's more important than ever to keep small lithium coin batteries away from children. On a mission to help keep families safe, battery brand Duracell and the American Academy of Pediatrics have joined forces to power safely. Bobby Mendez, president of Duracell North America.
At Duracell, we're very proud of be teaming up with the AAP in this shared mission of keeping children safe. And at the heart of the effort is a campaign to raise awareness.
Duracell has also come out with a bitter coating on their most popular lithium coin batteries.
And what this does is discourages the child from swallowing the battery. So that's really the at the heart of the innovation.
Duracell and the AAP urge all parents, caregivers, and pediatricians to learn more about lithium coin battery safety at Duracell.com or HealthyChildren.org.
Oh, you have mail, mistress.
Let's dig in the mailbag.
All right, thanks for all the emails. Remember, you too can be part of the crew. Kate at katedelaneyradio.com, 24/7. So as we dig deep into the mailbag, here we go. We're at an impasse with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. There is a pause in the vaccine, and I think that has some people a little bit nervous over that, and understandably so, as one woman in Virginia died with a blood clot problem from the J&J vax, one critical. That is a devastating blow. So the decision was, okay, for now we just put the pause on it. You think of people who are jittery already about getting the vaccine and side effects and everything else. And if you look at how many people have been vaccinated with the J&J, it's like 7 million, but still, which they say if you want to, scientists say, well, you can get, struck by lightning easier than this happening. But tell that to the fact that people are looking at one person died from getting a vaccine and one's in critical condition. So this is a brutal blow to the effort, I think, and to people who want nothing to do with, vaccines. One thing that we know is that enough people, it looks like, have been vaccinated, that you're seeing lots of pictures with people holding up cards and having stickers that say, I got both shots, or whatever it might be. So the theory, remember, was heading into vaccination land, if enough people did it, we would get the so-called herd immunity. So the question remains, will we get that herd immunity? And that was on the minds of a couple of you. Jake, listening to us in Austin, says, hello, Miss Kate. It's been a while. I've been busy, I got to tell you, but I'm still listening to you when I jog every day. I got the replay of your show inside my head. You talk a lot about the virus and other things, thank goodness, and you're not a one-trick pony. I mean that as a compliment. And thanks, Jake. And he says, so I got the vaccine. I was kind of reluctant, I have to be honest. I I just think there isn't a lot of testing, and I know brilliant people are working on it, and I know this elusive, as you call it, SOB of a virus. You got to decide, what is it I need to do to stay safe and stay alive? And you can't just look to working out, eating healthy, saying you have a good immune system, because we've seen that some people that do have that have unfortunately perished because they got it, and they got a bad case of COVID. So needless to say, I got what you got. I got Moderna. I didn't have any reactions, as you didn't have any reactions. And I feel okay about that. And who knows if we're going to have to get this year after year. It seems almost certain that now we're dealing with it, and this is our life, and we'll have to get the vaccine if we want to feel covered anyway. Maybe it's mind over matter. I don't know. I love the I don't know. I don't know. Is it mind over matter? We have free choice to do what we want to do here. But the whole idea was what I said. Do you get to that herd immunity? Can we open wide again? Can we go to restaurants and breathe? Can we feel like we can be closer to people than standing on little dots everywhere we go to separate us with the 6 feet between people? I think so. I think we're going to get there. We're not going to get there overnight. It's still because we're still in the throes of this, even though we're on the other side of it. That's somewhat on the other side of it, right? But not 100%. We're just not 100% there. There's still adjusting things. There's still, with these vaccines, looking at what's happening with people. I think that's good. Of course it's going to happen, right? And in the United States versus some other places, as I've talked about on this show before, our borders, our states are more open. I'm taking the show for the first time. I was traveling so much before the pandemic, and it was great because I took the show along and we were broadcasting from all these wonderful spots. And I'm taking the show to Florida next week, so I'll be broadcasting from there. And this will be my first time on a plane in, I guess, a year. It's been over a year. So I can tell you what that's like, getting on the plane and what the conditions are like, and you got to wear the mask except for if you're taking a drink or that kind of thing. But I know lots of people that have now started to travel for work or to go see someone they haven't seen, a family member in however long, and they're vaccinated and they feel pretty good about it and haven't had anything happen. So there is that. So Jake, hang in there. You're like the rest of us. There's a lot of I don't knows that are flying around. This is from Suzanne, who says, "Hi, Kate Delaney. I started listening to your show in West Virginia. I'm one of those people that sometimes I'm up late, sometimes I'm up early. Either way, there's always a way to catch what you have to say, and I'm getting hooked on it. I wondered, when you look at what happened with this J&J thing, and you think of the poor woman who died in Virginia because she got a vaccine, it does sort of take your breath away. One death is one death with this rare blood clot. She wasn't thinking that. And then another patient in critical condition, it does give you a reason to have your own pause. I think the pause was a smart thing to do, but I do believe that people will freak because of it. I think it's like a plane crash. You can tell me how safe flying is, but when there's a plane crash, we all think, oh, can you imagine having, waiting for somebody and the plane crashes and they don't get off, and it's always horrific, and it's horrific. It is like a plane crash to me when you talk about these vaccines. So it is scary, and it's funny because so many of my friends were lamenting the fact that they had to get two shots where they wish they could have gotten the J&J if it had been ready in time. Well, I with somebody dying and somebody in critical condition, even though you argue, well, look at the numbers, it, of course, it's going to give you pause. I mean, I have to be honest, right? If I was getting the J&J shot, would it be in my head, even though I'm sensible, I can look at numbers, run numbers, talk to people, whatever, would it be in the back of my mind, oh, well, they got a blood clot, oh, my gosh, what about Moderna, what about Pfizer, what, I guess it would. I mean, it would be. And people now that have signed up for the J&J shot, it's too late anyway because now it's frozen. It's temporarily paused. And Moderna and Pfizer are rolling. So it may be, I don't know, it may be that that it comes back, which is what I'm thinking will probably happen. All right, let's move on to a couple of quick ones. This one is from Norm. Norm says, oh, so sad to watch the nonsense in Minneapolis. It's horrible what's gone on. And, of course, it immediately makes you think, why? Especially an accidental grab, perhaps, for the gun versus the taser. But no matter what, that doesn't look good. And if my son had been in that situation, I would be furious and heartbroken and beside myself and be looking for somebody to definitely take the blame and the fall for that. It is outrageous when you think about it, and this whole upending of what is force and what are police supposed to do, and it's just a nightmare is what it is, because we can't live in a lawless country. So what ultimately is the answer? Yeah, the answer is the taser mix-up. Blame for a police killing is just another sad, outrageous end to a young life, you know? And what kind of changes will that bring about? I mean, there'll be some policy change or something will be talked about. But again, to the family, you cannot bring the dead son back. I mean, you know, you can't bring him back. Oops, sorry, wrong gun. Ooh. And that's why the resignation, I think, was very smart on both the chief's part and also certainly the 25-year or 26-year veteran to do that. Although many people thought, well, no, that wasn't, you didn't have to resign. And where that goes and that investigation leads, we'll see, because it's going to be at least a week or two until something comes out, I think, about that. Quickly, one more. JoJo says, yo, Kate, I love the mic drops. I have a couple of suggestions for you. There's some people that I could drop the mic on with some ridiculous things that they've done. I'm going to send you a bunch of them, but I think the funniest thing you talked about was that giant lizard in Thailand in the 7-Eleven. I immediately looked it up so I could see it. It was so crazy and freaky, almost looking like an alligator from the backside. Yeah, if I was in that 7-Eleven, I wouldn't. I might be filming it, though. Stay with us.
Bad theater seats, cheap Halloween masks, my apartment, all things with obstructed views. Add to these large trucks and buses. 18-wheelers and large buses have big blind spots, and like my apartment, they don't always have the best view. Bus and truck drivers deal with blind spots around the entire vehicle. Always take care not to ride alongside or too close behind them. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Have you ever thought about turning your Glock, XD family, or 1911 handgun into a semi-automatic carbine? It only takes about 30 seconds. The MechTech Carbine Upper is classified as an accessory and can be delivered right to your doorstep with no FFL or background check required. It's the world's most versatile pistol accessory. Build your custom upper today. Simply go to handgunconversion.com. That's handgunconversion.com.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
The CDC has called for a pause on the administration of Johnson & Johnson's coronavirus vaccine in the wake of a handful of cases of severe blood clots in recipients. The CDC and FDA say they made the recommendation for the pause out of an abundance of caution while they study the issues. The six cases all occurred in women aged 18 to 48 and occurred 6 to 13 days after they'd received the vaccine. One woman died and another is in critical condition. All 50 states have now followed the recommendation and put a hold on administering the J&J shot. Dr. Anthony Fauci tells ABC News that it's important to remember how rare these adverse effects have been.
I think the important thing to emphasize is that it is very rare. There were six women out of the 6.85 million vaccinations of the J&J, which means that it's less than one in a million.
You're listening to USA Radio News. The Biden administration is planning on pulling all remaining troops out of Afghanistan later this year. The Washington Post first reporting the decision to pull troops from the country by September. More than 3,000 troops will remain in Afghanistan past a May 1st deadline initially set by former President Donald Trump. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell criticized the decision from the Senate floor, saying that the administration had decided to abandon the fight against terrorism.
Precipitously withdrawing U.S. forces from Afghanistan is a grave mistake. It is a retreat in the face of an enemy that has not yet been vanquished, an abdication of American leadership. Leaders in both parties, including me, offered criticism when the prior administration floated the concept of a reckless withdrawal from Syria and Afghanistan. Those same voices in both parties should be equally concerned about the Biden administration's announcement today.
You're listening to USA Radio News.
If you are trying to quit drinking or doing too many drugs, listen to me. You don't know me and we'll never meet. I had a problem like you once. I drank and used to party a little too much till it got out of control and almost ruined my life. I realized I needed help to fix my problem before it totally destroyed me. If you've tried to fix your drinking and drug problem and you know you can't do it alone, you need to call the National Treatment Advisors. They'll immerse you into a 30-day program to replace your old habits with new habits and totally change your life. And if you have PPO private health insurance, the entire program may be covered. Fix your problem right now before it gets any worse. Get clean. Call now and learn more. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252. 800-296-1252.
You know, folks, I was talking with my honey the other day. My Pablo, honey. I said to her, I said, Pablo, honey, you go to my head. My radio head. Okay, computer. When you were here before, couldn't look you in the eye. You're just like an angel. Your skin makes me cry. You float like a feather.
Oh, boy. I miss those sounds. The sounds of Vegas and hanging out in the lounge at a very, very late hour. But you know what? There's no clocks on the wall and there's no one to tattle. I used to live there and I discovered the excitement of Cookie Jar and so many others. Right now in our virtual green room, Oliver Lovett is with us. He is a leading researcher, academic, writer, strategy consultant, and he's an expert in customer-facing real estate and the evolution of Las Vegas. In fact, he is a serving on the faculty at the University of London Business School in London. And he's a contributor to many exciting magazines and periodicals that I myself read. The Global Gaming Business. He's a columnist at Gaming America and Gambling Insider Mag. So, and he knows about the strategic trends in Las Vegas. Oliver, thanks so much for coming on.
Good evening. How are you?
I'm excellent. I miss my Vegas fix. I lived in Vegas for 4 years, and everyone in my life crawled out from every corner, every nook, every cranny to come and visit. It was exciting and fun. I got to know a lot of people, and it's very weird to see this past year when the lights went dim on the Strip, but now the lights are being turned up, I hear. What's happening in Vegas?
Well, the governor is due to announce that, you know, next week the restrictions will be lifted and we'll be at 50% capacity for showrooms and casinos and restaurants. The shows then crank up with you know, like the Abstinence opening up the following week. And, you know, we're expecting Las Vegas to have a, you know, a strong recovery leading up to September. And then conventions start rolling back towards the end of the year, 2022. And we get this, you know, COVID nightmare behind us and go on to be the greatest city in the world again.
There you go. I love that attitude. It's perfect. And you have the excellent Nevada accent. Where'd you get that accent? Via Scotland,
yeah.
Right?
From the streets of Scotland, streets of Glasgow. It's funny. So when I first came to Las Vegas back in 97, there were no direct flights from the UK. And if you wanted to come here, you had to go via Dallas to Chicago. And I visited with my parents on a road trip when I was 21. And I said, Dad, I want to live in this city. You know, it was in the 90s, the Bellagio was being built, Paris was being built. And he said, this is not a city for a nice middle-class boy from Glasgow. And it took me 20-odd years, but I made it out here in the end.
And did it live up to your expectations?
Well, unfortunately, I've lived in several cities in Europe. And I think there is something unique and special about Las Vegas. It really is the only 24-hour city that I've ever lived in. And if you're a night owl, and if you like, you know, going out for a beer at 2 o'clock in the morning or working through the night, it's a great place.
It is. That's what I said. There's no clocks on the wall. People would come and visit me, and, you know, if you wanted to get your dry cleaning done at 3 a.m., you could get that done. If you wanted to have lobster and steak, you could have that. You could have great music from whatever lounge, you know, you decided to crawl into, and that part of Vegas, there's no question. There is no time. It's like you lose track of time. So you said this.
Sorry, carry on.
No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, it's not like London, where if you live in London or New York, which are these other great 24-hour cities, so to speak, there's no respite. You know, you're stuck in them. You can drive for an hour and you're still in New York or still in London. But here, you know, 20 minutes, you can be in the desert and have, you know, tranquility and solitude.
Yeah, that's true. And I experienced that when I lived there. I mean, you go to the Hoover Dam, you go beyond that. You can go to the Grand Canyon. You're right. The desert is absolutely right there. It's not about the desert, though, in getting ready for these shows. You mentioned the shows. So are they having rehearsals?
They are. I got a text message from a friend of mine today who sent me a video of some acrobats getting back into gear. And what's been difficult, I think, for many people who do the shows is they have to stay in shape. So if you're an athlete or you're performing something like Abstinence or Cirque, you know, you have to be at the peak of your physical ability. And if you're not doing shows, it's been very, very difficult, you know, for a lot of these athletes to, you know, stay in shape. But, you know, people are in rehearsals, and I just hope that, you know, people want to come back to Las Vegas and see these shows again.
Yeah, no kidding. You were telling me an interesting statistic about how many people normally come to Vegas versus what happened during COVID. It was a big drop, wasn't it?
Sure. So the last couple of years, we've been above over 40 million visitors. Last year, it was 43 and change. And what you saw as of March, the casinos closed down voluntarily, and then they were forcibly shut down by the governor. So we had a period where the casinos were shut. We've had no conventions, no international business this year. And we're looking at 19.5 million visitors in 2020. And what that says is, even despite the fact there's been no shows, no conventions, no concerts, no sport, people still want to come to Las Vegas.
Yeah, and I think, we're calling it the Roaring Twenties, and I think things are going to explode big, and Vegas is going to be one of those places that is going to explode. Don't you feel that?
It wouldn't surprise me if next year is a record year for gaming revenue. I still think we'll be a little bit off in terms of visitation because I think the conventions will have a slower return and that some of that midweek visitation will be challenged. But I think I can tell you anecdotally, a lot of my friends from Europe and from all over the world, they are desperate to come to Las Vegas. And I'm sure your listeners are too. Everybody just wants to meet up in Las Vegas. And, you know, geographically, we're, you know, a couple of hours from everywhere. And it's much more fun meeting in Las Vegas than it is meeting in, you know, Denver.
Yeah, no offense to the people in Denver. I agree. Then it is a meet-up place. And It's different than what Vegas used to be like or what people thought it was like. I mean, it's just got a little of this and a little of that. There's always something to do. And so the vaccination process, it sounds like, went smoothly or is going smoothly. Is that what's happening?
Yeah, the frontline workers, a lot of them are being vaccinated. So the casinos are generally becoming much more safer. And, you know, the spread is not as bad as it is in other cities. I think 9% of the population of Nevada have been vaccinated by now. And what you're seeing is because of those vaccinations, the city is opening up things that are just completely shut in other cities. I mean, Omnia Nightclub opened its terrace over the weekend, with a limited capacity, but it's an outdoor terrace nightclub. And the pool parties, I mean, the weather's been great here. So the pool parties opened last week, granted socially distanced and reduced capacity. But if you go to California, California is a ghost town. Las Vegas, if you wandered out there, other than the face masks, which are compulsory still, you wouldn't realize how bad this pandemic has been, especially over the last 12 months.
Yeah. You know, you did some research on Vegas and what people were coming for and, you know, kind of the, it's interesting, you did a blog that I was reading earlier today, Is Las Vegas Missing a Marketing Opportunity, and City of Signs, and tell us about that and what you learned.
Well, this is me being an academic now, because I think Las Vegas is one of the most interesting cities in the world to study. And if I may, if anyone who's interested in business or competitive strategy, I was interested in reading my work, just take a step back and have a look at Las Vegas, because for a long time it was like a malign city. You know, people said it was a sunny place for shady people, whereas the history of the 70s, 80s, 90s, academic rigor and study of Las Vegas became something of some note. My hypothesis is, if you look at the Strip and Fremont, the casinos are selling the same product at the same time, in the same place, to the same people, in the same price. You know Las Vegas. You can go and play a blackjack table at the Wynn, which is probably the leading property in town, and it's the same blackjack that you're playing at Circus Circus or Excalibur, which are completely different properties looking for different customers. So the challenge you have from a business perspective is, how can you drive competitive advantage within the market if you're selling the same product?
Right. Yeah, fascinating. Where can people find you, Oliver?
I'm on Twitter. I'm Ollie Lovett, OLLYLOVAT. And I post on LinkedIn and, again, the magazines that you mentioned.
Perfect. Well, I can't wait till we meet up in Vegas. Ollie, thanks so much for coming on.
Thank you very much.
All right. Oliver Lovett from Las Vegas, talking about the city that never sleeps, really. They say New York is the city that never sleeps, but honestly, it is Vegas. And you heard what he said. You'll see the gaming, the shows, all that stuff, of course, opens up. But the big conventions, there were so many conventions that went to Vegas. In fact, as a speaker, as me out there speaking, the two biggest places for conventions in the United States, Orlando, Florida, and Las Vegas, just on the same par right there. And I think they both bounce back, but I do believe he's right. It happens late in the fall and really into 2022. Mic drop, that's coming up. Hi, this is Kate Delaney, and I have a confession to make. I'm addicted to journaling. So many of the ideas I get from my radio show or books hit me at weird times, and I need to write them down. Does that happen to you? So I decided to create my own journal with my pal Jackie. Looking for a great gift for your wife, sister, mother, aunt, friend, or boss to end 2020 or kick off 2021? My girlfriend's gratitude journal includes inspirational quotes and loads of room to write, and it just dropped. Here's the best part. You'll also get a copy of my Forbes book, Deal Your Own Destiny, Increase Your Odds, Win Big, and Become Extraordinary. It's loaded with ways to chart your own life and filled with the success habits with some of the biggest names on the planet, stuff they shared with me that can help catapult you. Here's the best part. For both hardcover books, it's just $29.99. Yep, go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer. Again, all of it for just $29.99. I got the shipping covered. What are you waiting for? Just go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer today.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
I tried other brands, but I came back to my sunshine.
For the best hot or cold pain relief, get the best. Get a Sunny Bay heating pad.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck, or back, or shoulder.
And the best relief for that pain is a Sunny Bay heating pad. Did you know that the American College of Physicians said that one of the best ways to treat muscle pain is heat therapy? Sunny Bay heating pads are handmade with high quality, can be used at home or at work, and have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy.
Why take another pill?
Many people use our Sunny Bay heating pads alone and got rid of the neck pain.
Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body.
Our homegrown small business tries to help people just like us. That's why we design and test our handmade products with great care before we introduce them to the public. You can easily find Sunny Bay heating pads on Amazon. Just go to Amazon.com and search for Sunny Bay heating pads.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions. SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
To be joined by Michael Pauley. We had a great off-air conversation. Hell is the Night is the name of his book, and I know it's conjuring up all kinds of image, and I love it when a book nails what it talks about, and I think that's the whole deal here with Michael's book. Michael, thanks so much for coming on.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So let's talk about, first of all, what is the book about?
Well, the book is about being caught flat-footed by an alien invasion, which, of course, is how anybody would get caught with an alien invasion. But early on, you lose your national command authority, and basically you're forcing old guys like me back into having to deal with it. And, of course, along with that comes with a boatload of people that don't know what they're doing because they're operating many levels above their pay grades. So it's how we would react to it.
Yeah, for you in diving into this in your book, have you always had a fascination with that? Because, you know, there's been so many television shows and movies and speculation about what's out there. Do you think about, hey, what's out there?
Well, any science fiction writer is going to think that way. I mean, it's kind of arrogant to think that we're alone, but then again, who am I to question? My real point to this was, what would happen if?
Yeah, what would happen?
What do we have on hand? What can we do to counteract it?
Yeah, and so what do we have on hand to counteract it? Give us just, because we don't want to give away everything in the book, but tell us one thing that we could do to counteract it that you talk about in Hell is the Night.
Well, for one thing, you got to know your enemy, and intelligence is one thing. gathering information about what their weaknesses are and then trying to exploit those weaknesses. And we are quite capable of actually doing that with several of the weapon systems that are coming online or have been online. Well, for example, one of which is a hypersonic missile, which I'm sure you may have heard about in the news.
Yeah.
In the last.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what's interesting is I wrote this book in 2014, so I knew it was coming. So that whole discussion was kind of prescient.
Yeah. So, and again, Hell is the Night, the Second Gomer Wars is the full title. As you said, you wrote it back in 2014, and it completely holds up. And it's a novel, and as you said, working in sci-fi. And you talk about General Patrick. What is General Patrick like?
Oh, General Patrick is an interesting kind of character. He's been thrust into having to hold the head, as it were. It's not something he wanted. It's, you know, a lot of people, when they rise to higher levels of command, they want to be there. They've worked hard to be there. But what happens when you take some poor schmuck that's, you know, like me, small-town country lawyer, and thrust him, based on his past experiences, back into the fray? He didn't want to be there. I'll be quite honest. You know, this isn't about what he wants, and it's about what is needed. So that's the interesting, I think, part of that character. He has a long history, but that history is not something he wanted to ever exploit.
Yeah, and it's so funny because you talk about, it's not funny, but you talk about, like we just said, what do we throw at him? And that's what your imagination runs wild with that. So you have had to be somebody to weave a story like this that, like I was saying in the beginning, you're interested in what's out there, right? And thinking about what would the possibilities be like. So when you started to come up with the characters like General Patrick and what would happen and the president, President Blanchard and all that kind of stuff, was this really fun for you? For people who have written a novel and then you sit down, you come up with this, what was that like, that process?
Oh, I tell you what, I had a great time. And what's interesting is as I was writing the book, I would have a thought about where I want to go with it. But then I would get just shy of that and go, wait a minute, I'd rather go here. And yeah, so it was kind of a tale where I couldn't tell you how it was going to come out when I started writing it.
Yeah.
It kind of flowed, and it was a lot of fun. It really was.
So, and you keep writing. I mean, you got more books than you, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I got the first book in the series, and then I got the third one that hopefully will be out. We're shooting right now, I think, for February.
Nice. So what do you hope people listening to this interview and hearing us talk about this, you know, Hell is the Night, the Second Gomer Wars, what do you hope people take away from reading your book and your books?
Well, a couple things. Number one, I've tried to be as hard with the science as I could be. I know that some of the writers of the past, like H.G. Wells, didn't have a lot of hard science. But Heinlein and Asimov did. And I was hoping to bring along some of that hard science along with the logistics. You know, you don't fight a war without logistics. Well, you don't even take a family to the beach without logistics.
So, boy, that's true.
You know, when you start getting into something like this, you have to go with more to it than that. And so I'm hoping that the book demonstrates to people just exactly how much it takes to make something work and to take away some of the hard science.
Yeah.
I got a wonderful science advisor in my wife who's, you know, great with science and math, and she did a wonderful job of helping me with some of that science research. I think I've told you this before. If the science is right, she done good. If the science is wrong, then I didn't understand it. That's on me.
I love that. And we should say, because, you know, we talk to people on this show of all over the world, people from the UK, people from Australia, from Wales, from Brazil, from Ireland, etc. And there is a global bent to this because you incorporate the UK, especially in this, right?
Oh, absolutely. And it's the UK, for example, the Michael Patrick's deputy commander is General Fuller, actually Field Marshal Fuller, from the British Army or the UK Army. And yeah, I mean, it's a bent that includes every nation that would be affected, up to and including Russia and China. Although yeah. Russia is somewhat of a less willing participant, and that's covered in the book too. And I'm not going to say too much because that's part of the story. So I mean, you can't fight a global enemy without a global approach.
Right. So you have to have cooperation. You have to have some kind of a relationship. So you talk about the relationships and how they stack up, and that can be tough when you have egos involved and you have hell that you're fighting, because that's, you know, that is the title of the book, Hell is the Night, because you're fighting something that's unknown.
Absolutely. Which is why we call them Gomers.
Yeah. I was going to say, how did you come up with
Gomers? If you knew where they were from, you would, well, I mean, if you knew where they were from, you'd refer to them as Martians or Venetians or whatever. But when you have an enemy that you absolutely have no clue where they came from, that's a Gomer. Sort of like a radar screen is going to say a bogey. These are just unknown, and hence the name Gomer.
I like it. So when I think of Gomer, I'm thinking of, you know, I've heard, and you gave the examples of a couple of other types of aliens. Could, you know, what's the wild dream of this? Could you see this? Because a lot of people now are thinking, well, you know, if I hit the right chord with my book, maybe it gets turned into something else. Maybe there is a movie or a series. Would that be like the wildest dream you could imagine for this?
Oh, it would be, as long as it wasn't, you know, cutting out certain characters. I think what's interesting is I had a movie treatment done on the first book, and they cut away one of the biggest characters completely. So, you know, I'd love to see it as a movie. I think it'd make a great movie. But I also would like to see it done more like Stephen King likes to see it done. I think he discovered that they cut a lot of his stuff initially. So he became more involved with it when he got to, say, example, The Stand. Stephen King became very involved with that. So at least the story was told.
Right,
that's,
right.
To me, the key is if the whole story is told, then that would be a great movie.
Right, and it is about telling the whole story, and we don't want to give it away. Pick it up. It's a perfect time for reading this kind of book, especially Michael Pauly, Hell is the Night, The Second Gomer Wars. Thank you so much, and good luck with all your future endeavors and what's coming up in maybe February.
I'm looking forward to it, and I thank you, Kate.
This is Kate Delaney, and I have a confession to make. I'm addicted to journaling. So many of the ideas I get from my radio show or books hit me at weird times, and I need to write them down. Does that happen to you? So I decided to create my own journal with my pal Jackie. Looking for a great gift for your wife, sister, mother, aunt, friend, or boss to end 2020 or kick off 2021? My girlfriend's gratitude journal includes inspirational quotes and loads of room to write, and it just dropped. Here's the best part. You'll also get a copy of my Forbes book, Deal Your Own Destiny. Increase your odds, win big, and become extraordinary. It's loaded with ways to chart your own life and filled with the success habits with some of the biggest names on the planet, stuff they shared with me that can help catapult you. Here's the best part. For both hardcover books, it's just $29.99. Yep, go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer. Again, all of it for just $29.99. I got the shipping covered. What are you waiting for? Just go to katedelaneyradio.com, click on books, and special offer today.